Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. Today we are going to discuss beer, which I'd like to talk about beer. My guest in the studio is brewmaster and from Bayou Teche Brewery, Carlos Knott. Welcome, Carlos.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And then joining is a regular here at KRVS and all over, Mr. Louis Michaud. So,
glad to be back.
And Louis likes beer. That's what he's doing here. But we're going to talk about brewing beer, actually, you know, from the whole thing of home brewing into the commercial realm. And then we're also going to listen to some music because both of you were involved in a project where you looked at a lot of rock and roll favorites and standards and put them into French. So we're going to listen to some songs also. So, Carlos, I want to talk to you about – because you've had a really interesting life. And you know, you're very much associated now with beer. And I'm curious. I know some history of that you were in the service and you were stationed in Germany.
That's right.
And is that when just your interest in brewing first started or prior?
Yeah, just then. I'm like most Cajuns. You think you know everything about beer. I was about 19 at the time and drank a lot of beer in cans. And then we got sent over to Europe. And the first weekend, they bring a beer, and it's like, first off, it's a pint. And then it's the best beer you ever drank in your life. It's so full of flavor and alive, and it's just it's like liquid bread. It's so delicious. And you realize quickly you don't know anything about beer at all. And we spent 6 years there every weekend traveling to a different town,
trying
the different beers. Because every town has its own little brewery.
Sure.
That kind of the beers evolved with the food of that area. So it's just different beers everywhere you go.
And so you had access to the actual like brewmasters and some of the folks that were working at the breweries? Did you have a chance to sit and talk?
Somewhat. It depends on the scale of the size of the brewery.
Yeah.
The bigger ones, of course not. It's like
sure.
Like NASA trying to get a secret out of them.
Yeah.
But the smaller ones, you get to know the people. There was a small one in Heidelberg, and pretty much you got to watch them brew the beer. I really didn't start getting an interest in brewing beer until I got word that the Army was sending me back to the States. And I started panicking because there's no way to get some of those beers. So.
Well, I'm curious, when you were there, was home brewing a big deal? Besides the actual breweries?
In Europe itself?
Yeah.
No, not really. The beer is a lot cheaper, I think, in Europe than it is here because maybe it's a tax or something.
Okay.
But everyone drinks a lot of beer and a lot of wine over there, and it's with every meal. So there's not a big interest in home brewing. In the States, it was different, I think, because, A, at the time, this would be like the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
There wasn't much to choose from in the States. So if you wanted something different than what the three big guys are brewing, you pretty much have to learn to make it.
Well, you know, I'm curious about this because I was part of a group that hosted for a few years in the Opelousas area. They do an exchange. It's a city exchange with a town in Belgium.
Right.
And so folks would go there and then the Belgium folks would come over here. But also so many of friends of mine that travel to Europe – looking at both wine and beer and talking about how those are such a big part of the daily customs with eating, that there's always a beer with the meal or there's wine. And so then people come back and want to do the same here but have a different reaction physically. And I'm curious about if you know if there's anything with – I don't know, like the fermenting process or just, you know, that process, you know, like folks will talk about when I'm over in France and I'm there for 2 weeks as part of festivals and I come back here and then I try to drink the wine or when I've been in Belgium and drink the beer, I get tired, you know, I get tired, like I can't keep up my regular pace, but
right.
Yet there.
I think there it's just part of the atmosphere as well. It's just part of what you do. It's like here you'll drink a Coke with your fast food. There it's even frowned. I mean, you get beer at McDonald's over there. You know?
Oh, really?
And it's just it's very different culture, and you just get tied up in it, I think, or caught up in it. Our landlord, he drank beer with every meal. I mean, it's hard to get used to seeing the road workers drinking beer with their sandwich at lunch on the side of the road and go back to work in the big machinery. But I think it's you just get – because it's pretty much the same process and same ingredients. I think they might use higher quality in Europe a lot of times than we do here in America, the bigger breweries in America.
Okay.
But overall, it's the same process.
Yeah. You know, because I do remember some of those folks from Belgium you know, all of a sudden I was like, oh, shoot, yeah, we've got to go grab, you know, beer. And there, and that was quite – I mean, this was probably 15 years ago at least, and you didn't have the access to a variety of – of beers in this area, and they discuss that.
And the nice thing in our – well, my brewery kind of does the same thing. The Belgians and the French have a different brewing tradition than like the English and the Germans. English and Germans is very scientific, and it's like every batch is exactly the same. And, the Belgians and the French, it's more left to like the art of brewing. It's like, hey, what's in the air today? We might incorporate into beer some wild yeast, some different temperatures as opposed to all this refrigeration. They may vary the temperature based on the seasons. So they and actually in those parts of the brewing world, they call them saisons a lot of time because it's left up to the season of the beer. So a Belgian beer drinker will drink several different beers throughout the year.
Yeah, different kinds. Right. And where you saw with the German folks, it would kind of be standard.
Right. They'd have their three or four beers at the brewery, but each one was always the same beer.
Yeah.
And the English are the same way. Americans, the big breweries are as well. It's like it's always quality control.
Sure.
Whereas it's more of the science of brewing than the art.
Well, and I'm curious, too, with, you know, when you moved back then is kind of when you got into home brewing.
That's right.
So prior to that, were there other things in life that really intrigued you in terms of, you know, kind of that experimentation process of putting things together?
Yeah, we joke. I have ADD, I think. I think every day it's a new project.
Oh, interesting.
And
so
it's Cajun cured meats. I love to do that. So, and we're in Germany. You couldn't buy Boudin on Dewey.
Sure.
So I dragged my son. He was, you know, fifth grade. We'd go. Sunday we're making.
Is that the artist?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
He's
all right.
The artist. Yeah. Every Sunday we'd make either Boudin or Dewey or Tasso or something, and I still have a passion for that. All the different foods of the area. Matter of fact, we often joke we're going to have a couscous cook-off because, man, I love couscous.
Yeah.
So that's like my Sunday morning ritual. Still, every Sunday morning we make couscous. So is that the music? I love the music of the area. I survived those 6 years in Europe because my folks would mail us the CDs of, like, you know, all the bands that were big at that time, the Beau Soleil and all these guys.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, going back to how you were comparing the different countries, was Germany big on pairing the different types of brew with food?
Yes, but it's not something that's conscious like we would think here. Hey, I've got to find something good to go with this.
Okay.
It's instinctive.
And
the best way, like even in America, if you want to pair a really good beverage, a wine or a beer, with a cuisine, you just pick one from that country, and often it'll work. So, or something similar.
Sure.
So it's more instinctive in their culture because it's like growing up here. I think I was in like seventh or eighth grade before we had a dish without rice in it.
Yeah.
My mom made spaghetti, and we're like, "Hey, where's the rice?" We're all panicking. So I think here, you know, we have a cuisine. Whereas in Europe, each country has one that they kind of gravitate to as a comfort food.
Yeah, yeah. And
they're just – their beers have always evolved with those foods.
So you moved back here. Well, you were in the Northwest for a while.
Yeah, the Army sent me to the Seattle area for 3 or 4 years after that.
And, boy, that's a big, you know, microbrew area out there.
Well, the weather's terrible. It's like rainy 9 months straight. So that's all there is to do, drink coffee and beer up there.
Yeah.
But it's huge. I think it's a good 30, 40% of the market is all microbrewed beer.
Wow. So you – but for home brewing for you did not start till you moved back here to Louisiana.
No, I started in the Northwest.
Oh, you did. Okay.
We'd every weekend – we were soldiers, so you're always looking for inexpensive alcohol.
Yeah.
So we'd go hit all the microbreweries for the free tours. And I think at the time there was 20 or 30 around the post. And those guys were all big into homebrewing, the brewers there. So I started up there learning from those guys and from the different homebrew shops that they had up there.
Yeah, and because, I mean, there's – a lot of times there's like the community organizations and things too, right? I mean, there's like the homebrewers guilds and things like that, association.
Right.
And it's a bunch of people getting together and experimenting. Right.
And it was an eye-opener for me as well because up there they were pairing – or crafting beers to go with their cuisine, which is really a bland food. The Pacific
up in
Northwest.
The North. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really bland. If they use salt, they're excited, right? So they brew these beers that are really super big and bold and very hoppy to kind of make up for this cuisine.
Oh, interesting.
Whereas, you know, in my mind, I'm doing the opposite. I'm like, okay, well, I've got, a gumbo. That's already rich.
That's
it's got
right.
pork fat and roux and cayenne pepper and everything in it. So you need a beer that's still flavorful but not overpoweringly flavorful to match.
Okay, so then you come back here, and you first started out homebrewing here before you got into commercial business. And did you already have the equipment by the time you moved here? Or?
I did. We increased the size of it as it was about a 10-year period. Like most families in Louisiana, when you get together on a Sunday, there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we started off making five and then 10 and then one barrel size batches of beer for the
different events. So when you say making five like what?
5 gallons.
5 gallons.
Most homebrewers start about a 5-gallon batch. And then we just keep ramping it up the size as more and more people would show up.
So, yeah, and you would and what exactly do you need when you do that?
It's like making gumbo. You have a propane burner and a big pot. There's different types. You've got the one that you use an extract. So the companies will actually make your they call it wort, but the sugar water that you make beer with. They actually make it and they make a syrup out of it. It's kind of like it's kind of like what's inside of a Milky Way bar.
Caramel kind of stuff.
Yeah, that barley syrup
or whatever it is. Okay.
And they make an extract. Well, you can just boil that in water, cool it, add your yeast, and you can make beer. In 2 weeks, you're going to have beer. And then from there, usually work your way up to all grain brewing, where you actually buy the barley and the wheat, and you crush it like a real brewery would. So there's two basic kind of ways to make homebrewed beer. They're both pretty easy.
Yeah.
It's like making a big gumbo, except it takes 2 weeks to finish.
Yeah, exactly. But it takes the actual time that you work on it, like in a day period. Can you finish a batch like in a day and then it sits for?
If you use an extract, you can probably finish in 2-3 hours.
Okay.
And then you get to clean everything up after. All grain adds an extra 2-3 hours. So, and then you just put it in a fermenter and let it sit. And most people use those glass jugs like the water used to come
in.
You just ferment your beer in there. You put your yeast in with the wort, the sugar water, and let it sit.
And it has to sit in a cool area or a
– It depends on the style of beer. If you're making like a German beer, it's got to be closer to in the 40s.
Okay.
If you're making an English, around the 60s. But Belgian, you can go all the way up to 80s. So those are really good beers to make in Louisiana, the French and the Belgian styles.
Yeah. And then when you got into that homebrewing time, did you enter any – because I know they have a lot of contests where homebrewers can enter too. Did you ever do any of that
at all?
No,
I never did.
Okay.
It was mostly for the family and a VFW in town.
So yeah.
they'd always come out. But it was like I say, it was mostly just for the town of Orneville.
Yeah, to sit. And then your brothers got involved, at that time?
Sure did. Right off the bat, they're very interested in the brewing process
and
drinking the beer more so. But we're also a big crawfish family. We have some crawfish farms. And so it was kind of our weekend thing. My brothers would go crawfishing, and I'd make the beer, and we'd do the boils and it's kind of evolved from there.
And so when you came back, did you first just start producing what you had learned, like either in Germany or when you lived up in the Northwest, those kind of styles? Or did you right from the get-go, let's start experimenting here and see what I can throw in?
We kind of started the experimenting right off the bat. Most home brewers will do like English styles of beer or maybe the beers of the Northwest because there's a lot of information.
Which means what when you say English style?
They're ales.
Okay.
They're fermented at a warmer temperature, so they're a little richer, a little fruity flavors and spice flavors from the yeast.
Yeah.
The warmer the beer ferments, the more of those flavors you get. But they're easy styles because there's a lot of literature out there. At the time, there was a lot more literature. And it's an easy style of beer to brew as well, those styles. But our cuisine in Louisiana is based on continental Europe more so than the English or the American foods. You think about our ancestors, like my grandparents were agrarian. They lived off the land. But they'd have 4 or 5 course lunches, or they call them dinners in those days.
Yeah.
It would be a bisque, and a etouffee and French bread, and it was really nice, and it'd be a roast. So it's an elegant, even though it's a rural lifestyle. And so we wanted a beer to kind of complement that as a rustic beer with kind of the fancier trappings of Europe.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So we tended towards the Belgian and the French beers. There at the time, there wasn't as much information. And so we just thought, hey, that might work better with our cuisine. And it really does. And both countries have a great brewing tradition. We just kind of Americanized that beer, kind of like our cuisines.
Or Louisiana-ized it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, more so than American. You know, really.
Cajun-ized,
I mean,
I guess.
Yeah, Cajun, however you want to say that, right. You know. I'm curious, you know, you're talking about the pairings of the beer and the food and the different craft styles. Have you ever brewed a style that, you know, you thought would go just great with whatever the dish was and it didn't? You know, just in your experimentation,
not that it didn't. It's something we might have had to tweak more.
Yeah.
We've done that quite a bit. Actually, the hardest one was our first beer, the Bière Pâle. We had to tweak that a lot. A pale ale style is one of those styles that spans the world. I mean, every culture pretty much has one,
yeah.
Many of the cultures. And the English is very different than the American, which is all very different from the Belgian. And so we started off kind of thinking, hey, we're going to do an American version, and it just never worked. So finally, just one day, light goes off. Hey, let's do a Belgian version, which is more interesting malts than would use anywhere else. And it really worked right off the bat. But it took 4 or 5 years of tweaking that recipe.
But, you know, I'm curious, Carlos, is that something that is, you know, because sitting here and not being involved in any of that, like as a business, it's really hard for me, you know, to grasp that process. Is that just instinctive to you, like with your palate that
it's like making a sandwich? You know how
okay.
You know, once you know how to make a sandwich, you can make anything from a Reuben all the way down to, grilled cheese.
Yeah,
you just have to know what each ingredient does. But once you learn that, and I think that's with any skill, once you learn making gumbo or whatever, it's once you learn what the flavors do to each other, it's pretty easy to kind of decide what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you just know then when you eat it like you do
right.
And drink it.
It's to the point now, you know, there's still tweaking involved. We do multiple recipes. We're working on one right now that, you know, we have it nailed down, but it's like, okay, now let's do the last batches with 3 or 4 different kinds of yeast just to figure out exactly what we want.
Yeah,
It's still a long process, but have we done it longer, it's not as hard.
That's right. Well, listen, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to listen to a song. And, Louis, we're going to play a song that you performed. And then we're going to talk about how some of this music came about. But this song, My Generation, although you did it en français.
Exactly, en français.
Can you pronounce that? Ma Generation.
Ma Generation.
Okay, very good. And there's a couple CDs with – it's all great rock and roll music. Let's listen to that song and we'll come back and talk about that. This is Lost by You Ramblers.
Vous nous mettre en bas. Juste parce qu'on n'a pas tracas. Les choses apparaissent bien, bien froid. Et avant j'ai un bon âge. C'est ma génération. C'est ma génération. Pas vous autres pas disparaître.
Préparez-vous.
Je pas comprends ça, j'apprends des.
Préparez-vous.
Je ne veux pas faire une sensation. Préparez-vous. De ma génération.
J'apprends.
On ne peut pas faire une sensation. J'apprends parler de ma génération.
Préparez ma génération.
Je mourrai avant j'ai bon âge.
That was one of my guests here today, Louis Michaud and Lost Bayou Ramblers. That's a CD called En Francais.
That's right.
Cajun and Creole Rock and Roll that was put out by Bayou Tesh Productions. How did that – we're going to switch from beer for a little bit to music, you know, because it's all a part of living here. How did these CDs – because there's two volumes. We've got a third one that will be in production at some point. How did this music come about?
It's going to be a trilogy. Kind of like Lord of the Rings.
But yeah. Way to go.
Without all the little hobbits.
Through the decades.
But how did this idea come about,
Louis?
Well, it came about through beer and music.
Was it drinking beer one night and then music?
Well, it's basically my wife, Ashley, who was teaching at Beauchesne, knew Carlos's dad, Mr. Floyd, because he's into school boards and such. Said, why don't you ask your husband if he'll come play at our German fest? We're having a German fest. And, okay, so Mr. Knott wants me to play at a German fest. Well, I got German ancestors. I'm down to go play some music in Arnorville. So we went down to the VFW. He said, let me let you talk to my son, Carlos. He said, oh, yeah, we have that. And so we started talking. I'm like, yeah, I'll bring my dad. We'll come play. My grandparents came out. He said, yeah, we have that brewery. I'm like, what brewery? I said, oh, that one, man, I love y'all's beer. I didn't really like hoppy beers until I had that pale one. And, cool. You know, it's just a great coincidence. So then after I went and played the German Fest, I was like, why don't I ask? We were getting ready to record Mammoth Waltz. And Corey Ritchie, who produced and engineered, and I were talking about stuff. I was like, man, I met that brewery. May they be down to donate some beer to the recording of our album. So I called Carlos, and he came and brought some of the Boucané, which is that smoked wheat one. And so it was really the start of a cool relationship that really, you know, added to the creative atmosphere of Mammoth Waltz. And so they basically donated beer, and then I would bring – so since they gave us beer, I would bring him copies of the CD as it was being – mixed and stuff. Check this out. You know, what do you think about this? Throughout the kind of the stages of the process, he said, "Man, I really like what y'all are doing with that rock and roll." He said, "I've kind of always had an idea to do actual rock and roll tunes in French."
Wait, and this is Carlos saying that.
So Carlos told me that. I'd show him. You know, it kind of went from beer to music, back and forth, and I'd bring him the music, and then it was his idea to do all these covers in French, and asked if I would help produce it. And then eventually, we decided to make it a real thing.
Yeah.
And he told me to, you know, go ahead and talk to some bands and stuff. So I talked to all the bands that are on the first one, and you know, so many bands to choose from here in Acadiana. It was pretty tough. But you know, I knew which ones I maybe wanted to hit up first that would be the easiest and most open to doing some wild idea stuff like that. And I mean, every band blew my mind with how they came into the studio with these arrangements, and just already they were just so excited. So that's kind of how this whole project was born.
Yeah. Now, Carlos, do you speak French fluently?
No, just a little bit. Enough to get around.
Yeah, but interesting that you wanted, that's great.
Well, you know, my parents, we're of that generation where they definitely did not want to pass it on. There was that stigma attached.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's one of their regrets. They've always, you know, said we should have passed it down.
Yeah.
This was must have been in like the 60s and 70s. When there really was, before there was that Cajun pride kind of reawakening.
Yeah, yeah.
But, that being said, I'm still very passionate about preserving that language and passing it on. And then as far as Louis and I've got a quick story. The last day when we finalized kind of the En Francais deal, he came over to my house, and my coffee pot is probably the oldest one in Acadiana. It's a percolator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You plug it in the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh man, Louis is probably looking at my coffee pot. Look at this cheap guy here, man. That makes the best coffee in the world.
That's right.
Then I go over to Louis' house the next day, and his is even older. It's the kind you got to put on the stove, right, and light a fire on it. I'm like, oh, well, we think alike in the coffee pot department.
So great minds come together. Yeah.
Over coffee.
I want to step back a second. I'm curious about you went to play the German Fest at the VFW. Did you play any German music? Did you learn anything for that gig?
No, not that. Just the German accordion.
Yeah, that's what you brought to the. Yeah, very nice. So that's cool. That's how this all got going. I also want to talk a little bit too, because I know, Carlos, you have to leave here a bit early today, but you're participating in Soiree Royale, which is a fundraiser for scholarships, college scholarships. That's done through the Opelousas St. Landry Chamber of Commerce. And that's a great thing where there's going to be a number of chefs at the event that night, and also there's going to be pairing of beers with some of the food that's going to be there. Now, have you been told about some of the dishes that?
Yeah, I saw the list, and I'm thinking that we took a tour one time of a Cajun plantation, one of the plantation homes.
Yeah.
The guys in the tour said that the Cajun and Creole motto was "Nothing in moderation." And if you look at the foods at this event, there's no low-cal.
No, because there's
it's amazing. I saw that there's a pork loin stuffed with boudin, pepper jack cheese, and wrapped in bacon. I'm like, I'm in.
That's right. That's right.
Everything looks like it's.
So when you hear something like that, though, then how does a brewer think about, what would I pair that with?
It's like wine in a way. There are some rules, but they're a lot less strict than wine. And the main difference is wine is a contrast between the wine and the food.
Yeah.
Beer is a complementary profile. Beer, the grains are roasted.
I didn't hear it described that way before, right, with the wine, that has a contrast.
Yeah, so it's actually tougher to pull off sometimes.
Yeah.
Because some foods are just noted hard pairings because it's hard to contrast. But with beer, it's a lot easier because it's complementary. The grains are roasted just like you would brown a meat.
Yeah.
You get those caramel sugars. The beer goes through the same process, and you've got the addition of the bubbles in beer that actually cleanses your palate between courses. So the general rule in beer is almost anything will work except for your fruit beers. Those tend to be a little more difficult because they have the fruit flavors.
Yeah.
And actually, fruit beers are best with like a pork or a duck as opposed to dessert like you'd think.
Sure, yeah.
Dessert, usually like your black beers, like a stout often is the way to go.
Got it.
But generally, you can't make a mistake. It's still going to work, but it might not be the inspired pairing. And traditionally, your hoppier beers, like your IPAs or your beers that are really hoppy or bitter, those tend to go best with like pizzas or jambalaya. Because they're both bold flavors.
Yeah.
You want to complement it. And then your beers, like a Pilsner or maybe an Amber or something, with like a more of a delicate seafood pairing or a quiche or something.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, this is The Exchange, and my guest, who you just heard speaking, was brewmaster Carlos Knott. And we also have are you a brewmaster yet, Louis?
Hardly. I'm a brew taster.
He's a brew taster and a very, very talented musician, Louis Michaud, on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at www.krvs.org. We are public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, and listener supported. So please, you're feeling a little generous, help us out here because it's quite a variety of locally produced programs as well as international and nationally produced programs, krvs.org. We're talking about beer. We're talking about music. I'm curious, Carlos, what you have seen since you have been back and then started as a home brewer and then going into the whole commercial realm. You've probably seen a lot of changes in this state. When you moved back here, you didn't – I don't know. Maybe there was one company here,
right,
when you started. What have you seen change over time, the time that you have gotten into the beer industry?
The whole beer culture in the South, the Deep South, has changed. Actually, we're like the last – we are the last area of the country that hasn't really embraced the craft beer movement until recently, the last few years.
Oh, okay.
So the last few years has been a tremendous growth. I think there's another 6 breweries opening in Louisiana in the next year.
Really?
And it's just amazing because it's just more variety for everybody.
Yeah.
A friend of ours who has a brewery in New Orleans said – craft beer drinkers are promiscuous because they don't drink the same beer. It's not like their parents. I only drink.
That's right.
So like it's every weekend, hey, let's get 3 different beers and try them. So the great thing is as we in this state, as we introduce people to new beers, they're more open to trying a lot of different new beers. So it's really been kind of nice to see it just really take off. It's really blown up in the last 2 years for all the breweries here.
Well, and then the more that people are educated, I mean, the more there is, the more people are educated.
Right.
And the more they're finding out. And I just think that in the long, that's got to be better for business.
Yeah, and it, also it's not looking as beer as a commodity, because in Europe they never look at it. There's no like, hey, let's just go get a beer to drink as cheap as we can while we're cutting the grass. I mean, it's really looked as a
like
fine
when we're
beverage.
All in college,
right?
You know,
right.
I mean, sir, yeah.
So it's just a different culture, and I think people in this state are starting to see that it's the same thing. I mean, there are really fine beers to pair with a nice evening.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a lot cheaper than doing it with wine.
Well, you know what's interesting too is, you know, you have, you know, we're talking about the different groups that have come together from, you know, you talk about your home brewers, which, I mean, that's a hardcore group, you know, when you really get around folks that are really into it. But then you have the drinkers who, you know, really try to learn whatever they can about different craft beers. And that's a – I mean, that's a hardcore group.
Right. And you sort of see it just in general in Louisiana. I mean, there are always people who would go to the farmer's market and buy really nice produce, nice meat. But now you're really seeing it explode in Lafayette. You know, it's really taken off. And I think people are worried about what they're putting in their bodies and whether it's not just the cheapest they can get it, but also the best that they can get.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it in terms of – that's a good way to describe that and to explain that. With the beer that you're seeing come up throughout the state here, is there quite a variety of difference in what people's backgrounds were, like what styles they studied and what they're now right. creating here?
Exactly. And the craft brewery industry is also – each brewery is a reflection of that person that owns it.
It really is.
So you look at there's a – I guess I really can't say, but there's a famous brewery that has bicycles on the stuff because the people love bicycles.
Yeah.
And there's other ones that, you know, people like one that the philosophy professor has. And so his beers are marketed very different because it's like a reflection of him.
Sure, sure.
And so I think in Louisiana, you see the six we have now are very individualistic. I mean, the guys who work there all have kind of the same vision. And it's all different, so it makes it nice. It's not like we're all making the same beer and marketing the same way.
Oh, yeah. And there's guild meetings that people do go to.
Yep.
I'm curious, during that, is there a sharing of ideas or is that held pretty close?
No, not quite the opposite.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I can get the phone tomorrow if I have a piece of equipment break, and I can probably get someone to help me.
Yeah.
We all get along great. You know, it's still a competition.
Sure,
don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But all get along great. Yeah, we all get along great. And we all realize that, you know, the guy who drinks my beer today will drink a different beer tomorrow and he'll drink an Abita the next day. So it's good for all of us to get along.
Yeah.
We all do. At the meetings, they're a lot of fun and there's usually beer involved, so they get a little better towards the end.
That's right. You know, and I'm curious too, when you go to some national events, are women in the brewing industry, is that anything that you're starting to see more of women as brewers?
There's quite a few, actually, and there's been some profiles written. It's still not the majority, but there's quite a few. They have a society, they call it the Pink Booth Society. It's these lady brewers, the ladies in the industry. But there's quite a few.
Oh, okay.
There's quite a few in Louisiana.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
– My wife is actually the only person at our brewery who's a licensed brewer. And she does none of the brewing.
Interesting. Yeah,
but she's one of the few in the state.
Yeah.
Well.
I'm curious, just maybe with some of the women that you have met, have they started out the same way in terms of maybe coming from the home brewing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or just, you know, a lot of times you get a job someplace and then you realize you love it. And a lot of times I'm thinking of one brewer we know real well, one of the best brewers we know is a lady.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. She kind of came to the industry from another industry, loved it so much that she actually got the schooling and became a brewmaster. And it's just phenomenal beer. Women have a different palate. They actually have more taste buds than a man.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when they taste something that's really good, it really is good.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I wonder with I think back home in Wisconsin, some of those smaller breweries have been around for a long time.
Right.
But, you know, you wonder here how that will affect – you know, you see a lot of industries passed down generation to generation.
Right.
You know, and if you'll start seeing that more and more here, or if you've seen that when you've gone to national conventions, that's already something that is, you know, passed down from, you know, parent to son, parent to daughter.
I think there's some of that, but it seems most of it has actually been passed down from the owners, not always, but often to the employees. There's several big breweries that have just done that. They said, hey, you know, we're getting out. We're, you know, 150 years old.
Sure.
So it's for you guys, or something similar.
Yeah. Huh, very nice. Well, listen, I know that you have to head out. I want to say that people, if they can, head out to the Soiree Royale in Opelousas this Monday, the 9th. You will be there serving and talking with people about beer and craft beers and how you pair that with different foods. And there will be great food, great drinks, all kinds of things. I appreciate you coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. I know that you have a busy schedule. And we're also really going to look forward to the third volume of the music.
Well, if Louis ever slows down a bit, we'll get around
we have to rope him in too. Well, listen, we're gonna go out before you leave, but we'll be back with off of the second volume that you put together. Now, when you did the second volume of En Français, you changed a little bit of the theme that you were doing in terms of who was playing and.
Yeah, Louis can talk more about it, but it's a different generational feel. The first one was really younger bands kind of strutting their stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of proving, like the song says, my generation. It's like this is our generation of Cajun music. The second one had more of a generational feel. It was families that brought their grandparents in to help write the lyrics, and they had the grandkids singing. Many of the songs on the second CD span generations of artists. Who else am I thinking of?
With the Bairards, we have Al and his daughters. There's Terrence
and Marcella.
And there's
and you have the one we're going to
Babineaux.
Because that's the one we're going to listen to. But it's a really neat thing you said though about because you know just what a great opportunity to pass that language along. You know, for maybe some of the younger folks who don't speak or maybe who don't write. You know, the French that.
Nice, actually. When Gino came, there must have been about 60 people in the entourage that came out, like nieces and nephews. It was really nice to see, you know, that the kids are that interested into the
music. That's right.
And then when you see that, you know, hey, this music is not going anywhere. It's going to be around for a long time.
That's right. That's right. Well, Carlos Knott, I appreciate it. You're a man for the palate, a man for the ears with everything that you're putting out, you know, with craft brews and with music. We're going to go out as you leave with La Tour de Garde, and that is All Along the Watchtower. And this is the Babineaux Sisters. Carlos, we'll see you soon.
On Monday.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Very, very nice. That was the Babineau Sisters with La Tour de Garde. And that was off of Volume 2 of En Français. That was incredible, Louis.
Yeah, they the Babineau Sisters, they blew it off the roof with that one to me. I mean, that was their choice. They were the first band that I asked to be part of Volume 2.
Yeah, and they were how old about it this time?
I believe Gracie was 14, Julie was 12.
Yeah. Can we talk about that process for them, you know, recording, you know, a rock and roll song? You know, because it's different from what people expected of them to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think for every band it was, you know, for some bands they'd kind of, no matter how much you practice it, it's a totally different ball game than you used to.
Yeah.
And so it's just like getting completely out of your comfort zone, which was great. And for them, they were really ready for it. From what they told me, you know, they started playing accordion and fiddle and then been playing guitar and have been playing traditional Cajun music. And then they just got really prolific right away and started writing a lot of their own original tunes.
Oh, that's interesting. Isn't that great?
Which, yeah. It
gave them permission.
Yeah, and exactly. And so, but, you know, when they had tried to bring out their original tunes, you know how hard it is to put something new out.
That's
in
right.
Such a strong tradition.
That's right.
It's kind of like with this beer. And these CDs and the beer is kind of they parallel each other because it's like you're adding this new element that hasn't ever had a place in tradition in a certain sense.
Yeah.
And then you're taking Jimi Hendrix All on the Watchtower. You're taking their original songs, bringing them in, and people weren't, you know, as receptive as they would hope to their original material. Maybe want them to play more Jitezo Ball and Bosco Stomp and, you know, the real traditional stuff. So when I asked them to be a part of this project, they were all about it because, yeah, exactly. Gave us some affirmation that what they were doing was being appreciated, because that's what kind of I appreciated about them was they have, like, this real unique style, and you could tell they had it. You know, they have it in their in their thing.
It's well, just, and then just another way to show their musicianship. I mean, that's some talent. You know?
They chose the song. I mean, she played the fiddle solos, and they got their grandpa, who's from Forked Island, translated it. So it's a lot of words. Like they said, told me they didn't build a bridge to Forked Island until like the 70s. So
yeah.
A lot of his French is said a lot differently than other Frenches and such.
Yeah.
So it's a very cool translation. I mean, there's some beautiful one-liners. If you take Jimi Hendrix lyrics, put them into Forked Island French.
Yeah.
Comes out pretty great.
What a great. You know, I'm curious, since, you know, you worked on this project, did you notice anything with some of the musicians who had been around longer? You know, any – with the process they went through with, you know, some of that maybe had never done anything like this before?
Well, Gino Delafosse, I asked him to do – well, we had a request to do – Gino Delafosse doing Wild Horses. I said, man, what a great idea.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah.
Because he's a cowboy.
Yeah.
And so I asked him if he'd come do Wild Horses, and he said, yeah. He brought his whole band, like Carlos said, and all kind of – I mean, it was a huge old – it was a lot of people. It was great. We had a good time. And I'm not sure if he had ever heard the song.
Huh.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's heard it on the radio and stuff, but it was kind of like, you know, how's this song go? You know, so we learning it in the studio right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go over it and you go over it. And then finally, you know, and the singing style is so different. Singing Wild Horses than singing, you know, Zarekoe Pasale or whatever. And, yeah, so it was a very interesting process, you know, how that came. And then owning it. I mean, if you listen to his version, it sounds like he wrote it. And he had never really –
Yeah.
He had never known the original, like, good enough to where he could just sing it out. You know?
Sure, sure.
Terrence Simeon, another, you know, old school. They did In My Life by the Beatles with his daughter Marcella, and beautiful vocals, you know, just a very different style. And, you know, that second version, like Carlos said, it really kind of spans generation, and it kind of spans musical styles as well.
Let's put on – Cecil, can we listen to Gino's version that he was talking about? It's it is cut number five, track five.
Same with him. His French, you know, is so unique to who he is and where he is.
Is it Chevaux?
Yeah, Chevaux Farouche. Yeah.
Chevaux Farouche.
Wild Horses.
Petite femme, pas contente. Tu connais que j'ai. Moi, je peux pas te quitter. Glisser dans mes mains.
All right, that was Gino Delafosse and French Rock and Boogie with Chevaux Farouche, Wild Horses, made famous originally by some small band out of
England.
That's right, by the Rolling Stones. What a great project for you to work on with this, Louis.
I was really fortunate to have been asked to do these two albums. They were such an amazing process and experience for me.
And it's nice, too, that, you know, like you said, that, you know, how you had kind of a different focus with this one, with the families. I want to talk, though, a bit about there's one song that you really liked on here, Deo, which is Sadi Deo.
I guess Harry Belafonte had done a version which is based on a old Caribbean song, and then it's a very common New Orleans brass song.
Yeah.
And so Soul Express, who is a Soul Express brass band who plays on this track from Opelousas, you know, maybe the only brass band in Acadiana
Orleans
style. They're a really good
band. Yeah.
They're going to be playing actually at the Gulf Brew October 19th at the Horse Farm. As well as the Babineaux sisters.
Okay.
So I heard them playing, I believe it was after Gulf Brew last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I said, man, that's really good. And how cool would it be to get Corey Ledé, who's the most phenomenal accordion player, to play with a brass band, made it happen, and we did Superstition, and we did this Deo, it's kind of like Galanyap, yeah, while we're in the studio. God, this is too cool. We got to do another one. I mean, it was done basically first take. Yeah. Corey Ledé just, I mean, he didn't even have to practice. He just listened and played right along with the brass band. There's no rhythm going on. There's like, you know, just a couple drums and a bunch of horns, and he throws his accordion right in the mix.
Very cool. Well, Louis, can people see you around here anywhere soon?
Yeah, we're actually going to be playing our – Lost by Ramblers will be playing our first gig in Louisiana in months.
Yeah.
At the Blue Moon, October 11th for Festival Acadien, and okay, then Festival Acadien on the Saturday.
Wonderful.
Corey Ledé and I we have a new little project we call Soul Creole, and we're playing at the Blue Moon September 14th.
Very nice.
With,
Soul Creole.
The Malfecteurs, yep.
So just the two of you?
No, it's Cedro Ballou.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I've been knowing for years from playing in Texas.
Yeah.
He's an amazing drummer and accordion player. Chad Fouquet plays bass. And Madame Michaud plays tifa.
Way to go, Ashley. Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, everybody, we're going to go out listening from En Francais, Volume 2 from Bayou Teche Productions. And that's Deo, Louis Michaud. Have a good week.
Thank
Soul
you for
Express
having
Band.
Us.
The Soul Express Brass Band from Appalachia, Louisiana.
Santa Cruz. Oh, wait.